do any of us know about the people we elect to positions of power and control over our lives? Voters are subjected to an endless stream of propaganda pieces spun up by every campaign and the special interest groups for or against any particular candidate. But is there any real substance to their messages? Every candidate is portrayed as family-oriented, wholesome, caring, and the best character possible. They are often pictured with their families or kissing babies as the spin masters attempt to pull the heartstrings of the voters. The job of the spin masters is to portray the client in the best possible light with no regard if the portrayal is true or not. Does the truth matter anymore? After all, it's just politics. Let's contrast the employment process of campaigning and voting to that of the corporate world. The process of getting to know the applicant for a high-level job in the company. Consider a $50 million company, approximately the same size as the Kershaw County budget. Let's just say they're looking for a CEO and vetting their list of potential employees. The process would be nothing short of extensive and come at a significant cost to the company. The applicant's work history, including the duration of employment and level of performance, would be attained. What positions did they serve and why did they leave? Were their departures voluntary or mandated by the management? And if applicable, are there previous or pending accusations of sexual assault? Moreover, has the applicant ever been charged or arrested? And if so, for what? Have they ever been found guilty of an infraction, a misdemeanor, or even worse, a felony? What were the ramifications of these crimes, and what risk, if any, could they pose to the company? As the alphabet agencies know best, let's defer to the Central Intelligence Agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigations, or the National Security Agency, to name just a few. For so much as a custodial job, these agencies learn more about the applicant than their own families. In contrast, when a public citizen campaigns for control through representation, we, the people, must rely on their face values, alleged morals, and indistinct promises. Who is the wolf in the sheep's clothing, and why must we play this game of Russian roulette at the ballot box? One of the reasons we're in the state that we are today in the United States of America is because the people never vet the people wanting to lead us. In every case that you look, after you vote, after they get in, that's when you start to understand who these people actually are. This report is a case study in what happens when we don't know who we are voting for.
If a government claims a right, and then their claim is that they derive these rights from the people.
Right.
Well, how can people give a group rights that they don't themselves have?
To steal from each other.
Right. If we can't tax people, like I can't tax you, where exactly does government derive this right from? And once you come to, you realize that the goal ought to be as voluntary a society as possible. Now, how exactly you achieve that, how far you can push that is debatable, but certainly that should be the goal. That if government is providing a service for you, well then why does it need to be provided by force?
Part 1, the Kershaw County Kakistocracy. Derived from two Greek words, A kakistocracy is a system of government run by the worst, least qualified, or most unscrupulous citizens. It's been used sporadically to describe regimes across Russia, Egypt, China, and yes, even the United States of America. To better understand the kakistocracy at the present, the Kershaw County Liberty Report went four decades back and 630 miles north to a small town in Ohio on April 15, 1985. It is here when a married couple experienced the miracle of childbirth and welcomed one of two daughters into the world, Caitlin Elizabeth Greenhow. According to those who knew Katie, as she was called, intimately, she was a troubled child all too familiar with self-harm. And while the origins of her trouble and early push for remedy remain unclear, psychologists argued that a sizable intervention could have changed the course of her life. Caitlin attended Hilliard Davidson High School, Franklin County, Ohio, in 2003, according to her current Facebook account. There is some confusion as to when and where Caitlin graduated high school, although 2003 should have been the year of her graduation. According to sources close to Caitlin, for reasons still in question, she leaves her family and moves to her aunt's home in the Lowcountry of South Carolina. As an interesting side note, the aunt was reportedly addicted to drugs, which eventually took her life several years prior to this story. Caitlin's aunt's longtime partner is pictured here, in which Caitlin refers to her as Aunt Julie. According to a search on True People Search, Caitlin was studying biology at the College of Charleston from 2008 to 2010, followed in 2010 and 2011 at the University of Montana. At the same time, she was working as a preschool teacher at the Missoula Child Care Center. People familiar with her history stated that Caitlin followed a boyfriend to Montana in an effort to reignite a relationship. Those sources explained that her National Guard weekend duties would have been served with the units of the Montana National Guard and credited to her time in the South Carolina National Guard. From troubled childhood to Fort Hood, Katie joins the National Guard. Caitlin Greenhow's enlistment into the South Carolina National Guard is still unclear. However, it had to occur between 2003 and 2010. Katie Greenhow's basic training was, of course, at Fort Jackson, and later she was assigned as a medic to a combat unit. In 2007, Miss Greenhow, a young military police MP medic, SPC-4, Greenhow was mobilized for deployment. During the buildup of preparations, the unit was transferred to Fort Hood, Texas, for the final working up to deploy in-country, and we'll use proper DOD terminology. She was getting ready to deploy in-country to Afghanistan. Katie Greenhall never enters Afghanistan for reasons we are unable to disclose without violating HIPAA laws. Katie makes accusations of sexual harassment by fellow soldiers, which are later found to be unsubstantiated. According to our sources, this is the first of many Inspector General investigations Specialist Greenhow initiated over the next decade. Katie Greenhow's military career continued, and in 2009, Greenhow makes yet another Inspector General complaint with allegations of sexual assault against another soldier. The charge was investigated and found it to be unsubstantiated, just as the first. 2011, Specialist 4 Greenhow was again mobilized, sent to Fort Hood for a workup, and made it in country to Afghanistan for a scheduled one-year tour. Our sources tell us Caitlin made two combat patrols before being moved to an on-base clinic because her fellow soldiers refused to ride with her. After less than 90 days, she was returned stateside for reasons we yet again may not disclose without violating HIPAA laws. Interestingly, during that year, Greenhow made yet another IG complaint of sexual harassment, which again was found to be unsubstantiated. In 2012, Greenhow decides that she wants to fly helicopters, specifically Apache attack helicopters, and she applies and is accepted into warrant officer school and subsequently into flight school at Fort Rucker, Alabama. Specialist Greenhow accuses yet another instructor of sexual harassment, and yet again, it was all unsubstantiated. During her flight school, Greenhow falls in love with an Army pilot, Captain Tyrell Rose, and becomes Mrs. Rose. Captain Rose is stationed in Greenville as a Chinook pilot. Greenhow travels between McIntyre and Greenville on a regular basis. But all is not well in Camelot. Soon, the marriage is in shambles, and in 2015, Mr. and Mrs. Rose separate and start divorce proceedings. During the separation in 2016, Caitlin Greenhow Rose finds herself in a broken marriage, and as if on cue, you guessed it, another IG complaint against three people, including then-husband Captain Rose. Now, we must stop here to explain what happens to those accused by Greenhow Rose during an IG investigation. Their careers are frozen. They are unable to be promoted. They cannot be deployed, and their reputations are smeared. Their service record is flagged and is permanently placed to never be removed. They also cannot be deployed, leaving the unit short of personnel to the detriment of the entire service. And again, all accusations made by Greenhow Rose were, wait for it, found to be unsubstantiated. Has anyone seen a pattern yet? Turns out Greenhow Rose was charged and convicted of adultery for an affair while being separated from her husband before being divorced. Greenhow Rose received a letter of reprimand for her conduct. Katie Greenhow Rose becomes a qualified Apache pilot during this time and flies over the skies of South Carolina on a regular basis. However, trouble is brewing under the surface as the word of not only the IG charges she had made, but her adultery and attacks on those around her spread throughout the aviation wing. Quote, nobody wanted to be around her, said one eyewitness who went on to say, hell, she would walk into a room and everyone would walk out. No shit, unquote. As a side note, Katie graduated from flight school in the 2013-2014 time frame, and her last flight was in June 2017. The question is, why did the DOD accept her, given her background, when it is clear there were problems that should have raised red flags? Essentially, this was a mistake. a very, very costly mistake to the taxpayers. In fact, it is estimated to cost $1 million and require a six-year commitment from every soldier chosen for their training, as well as all the investigations started from her false allegations against anyone who came in contact with her. Also bad for unit cohesion. Katie Greenhow-Rose wasted no time moving on and found a new love in a small catering shop in historic Camden. Katie and Tripp Gwynn started dating in the waning months of 2017 marked yet another major turning point in the life and career of Katie Greenhow. The aviation unit had received deployment orders in the latter part of 2016 and was working toward their readiness targets before being shipped out to Fort Hood for the final workup before being deployed in country to Afghanistan. As deployment neared, Katie was treated to a large farewell party in May. In June, leading up to Katie Greenhow's deployment, she married Tripp Gwynn, thus becoming the Katie Gwynn we know today. The two were married in Greece and spent their honeymoon there at her urging. Katie goes to Fort Hood, Texas in late August for final workup before in-country deployment. People familiar with the incidents say Katie would cry all day and use the only van the unit had as a shuttle to drive between the psychologist and the chaplain's offices. It finally got so bad the command decided they could not have this action and ordered her home. Due to HIPAA, we cannot disclose any information regarding any medical information in relation to this incident. Katie was ordered home and grounded. Shortly after returning, Gwynn posted a picture on her social media page at an Ohio football game. This upset the people in her unit at Fort Hood, who are away from their families in the heat of the desert, getting ready to deploy to a war in Afghanistan. And here she is enjoying herself at an Ohio football game after getting sent home for crying all day. 2018, in June, she came off of deployment orders and went into a GS General Services 9 job at Joint Force Headquarters as an Equal Opportunity Specialist. She was also transferred from the aviation unit to a position at the Pine Bluff Armory in Columbia for her weekend duty station. The unit is dubbed by the other soldiers as the Island of Misfit Toys, a reference to the animated Christmas. Caitlin was grounded for reasons we cannot disclose. After she was cleared to fly, her flight status had been degraded, and she was needing to spend more time in a simulator to bring her training levels back up and again be able to fly. Due to scheduling problems on her part, Caitlin was unable to gain the amount of simulator time to be able to actually fly. Her command refused to allow her to fly, despite being cleared to fly. Nobody wanted to fly with her, said one person with knowledge of this time. Quote, Katie is the reason women have a bad reputation in the military, said one woman Apache pilot. The Gwynn family welcomes a baby boy on April 29, 2019, as their family continues to grow. In June 2019, Katie is reassigned to the 351st Aviation Support Battalion with little contact with flight operations, including her own flight time. On multiple occasions, Miss Gwynn tries to get the command to let her fly. This happens multiple times over multiple years, and despite being cleared, command will not let her fly. Trip, Gwen, focus on their new lives with their new baby boy. Well, during that period of time, Trip Gwen had a catering shop at 1011 Galleria, a building on the corner of Rutledge and DeKalb in downtown Camden. Katie Gwen begins to complain to the landlord, Creighton Miles, who owns the building there, about the rent, the electricity bill and the water bill going up. Katie then complains and complains and begins to pay the rent on the last day of the grace period, at the last hour of that grace period. And for months, she pays this at that time. She was in the car headed from Columbia to pay Creighton Miles the rent and was stuck in traffic. She made a phone call to Creighton, and when Creighton answered the phone, she said, I'm gonna be late. And Creighton said, well, if you're gonna be late, it'll be a $25 late fee. Well, apparently Katie went ballistic. And why? It's not my fault. It's not my fault. So the next day, Katie came into Creighton's office and poured 2,500 pennies on the desk and screamed, there's your late fee. Subsequently, the Gwens get an eviction noticed and are scrambling around trying to find another place with a commercial kitchen so that Tripp can continue to support his family. During this period, around March, Katie takes her young son, Eli, and runs off. Tripp calls 911 and officers with the Camden Police Department respond. Subsequently, attempts to obtain the 911 recordings have yet to be successful. During 2020 and 2021, congressional investigations are launched from complaints from Katie about gender being part of the problem, reason that the command is not letting her fly. Due to the level of command structure accused of this, it's kicked up to a congressional investigation. The whole command is now, their careers are frozen and they can't do anything until, they can't even deploy until the congressional committee comes back with their disposition. While this is going on, the command has got 8 or 10 female pilots under their command flying all the time. What happens? The congressional report comes back. There's nothing to be substantiated. There was no sexual gender preference. Subsequently, around January or February in 2021, Gwen begins to work inside the Kershaw County GOP. During this time, when they're moving from the 1011 Galleria now to the paddock and scrambling around, Katie gets the idea that she wants to jump into politics. We've got to do something. She begins to work inside the Kershaw County Republican Party and organizing people for the precinct reorganization in May and April of 2021. And then in April at the county convention, Katie Gwen is elected to be the Kershaw County Republican Executive Committee delegate to the state GOP. As the Executive Committee to the state, She was invited to all the galas, the GOP galas, as these pictures show, and was hobnobbing with Ted Cruz and Henry McMaster and the dazzling bright lights of political life. So in June of 2021, then State Representative Vic Dabney decides that she'll be a perfect liaison to the state delegation, legislative delegation, to the Kershaw County Council. She is then hired as an assistant liaison to the Kershaw County State Legislative Delegation. This is where the seed is planted to get Katie Gwynn to run for Kershaw County Council Chairman against Julian Burns. In June or July of 2021, as the liaison, Vic Dabney and Katie Gwynn and Jimmy Jones and a few others of County Council meet for a luncheon in which Katie is introduced to those councilmen. Jimmy Jones takes an immediate liking to Katie Gwynn, and within a month, maybe 2 months, Katie Gwynn is suggesting to people that she might run for Kershaw County Chairman against Julian Burns. You see, Jimmy Jones, ever since Julian Burns was elected, has been at odds with his policies and the Kershaw Vision 2030, just as we at the Liberty Report were against the economic development boondoggles, the swamp in the park, all the spending and that Julian Burns was doing in their Vision 2030. So Jimmy Jones and a small group of influencers were looking for someone to run against Julian Burns. They went around with just like Cinderella with the glass slipper, as the princess ran around with the little emerald shoes looking for the right fit. These influencers went around looking for people, including me. But my shoes didn't fit. And neither did any of the others until they found Katie Gwynn. Jimmy Jones and those influencers are the reason that Katie Gwynn ran for chairman. It was nothing but anyone but Burns, and whoever fit the glass slipper was the choice to be made. Without any research, without any knowing, Jimmy Jones and Katie Gwynn were suddenly best friends. Soon after Jimmy and Katie met, word began to spread as Katie tested the waters about, what do you think of me running for council chairman? Vic Dabney told her that if she did, she would have to resign her seat as liaison by law in order to run for council chair. According to Mr. Dabney, she refused to do that. Subsequently, State Senator Thomas McElveen and another gentleman met with Katie Gwynn at a lunch in Bishopville, in which Thomas McElveen himself told Katie, you have to resign as liaison. Subsequently, in October, Ms. Gwynn resigns, saying that she would run for county chairman and in the best interest of Kershaw County residents, she thinks it's a good idea to resign. Nothing about, according to the law, you have to resign. Again, another lie. Katie Gwynn officially files as a candidate on April 15, 2022. And then in June, Katie defeats Julian Burns in the GOP primary. with no Democrat opposition in the fall election.
A Kershaw County woman is making some history as the first woman nominated to be Kershaw County Council Chair. Katie Gwynn won the GOP primary this week and faces no Democratic opposition in November, making her the presumed winner.
I don't think it has really sunk in yet. I never aimed to make history or to break any glass ceilings. It just happens to be that I am also female.
Gwynn's win comes just after Kershaw County made history earlier this year with having female mayors in all the municipalities.
Women make excellent leaders. They lead with compassion and empathy. They're excellent decision makers. They really should be in all levels of government and everywhere decisions are being made, and I'm just excited for that. And so I think the people of Kershaw County have embraced that and elected an all-female team.
An inspiration she hopes will inspire her kids and others.
So I have a 13-year-old stepdaughter as well and a 3-year-old son. I hope it's inspiring, and I hope it teaches people that if you work hard, it doesn't matter your gender, your race, your background, or where you're from.
As she has no opposition, she is preparing for the role and is ready to get started representing the county.
The next steps are to get plugged in all the departments in our local government. Don't want Kershaw County to miss a beat come January. I just want us to roll right into decision-making and policy.
For Street Squad in Kershaw County, I'm Walker Lawson.
So in November, Katie is officially the chair-elect, and Gwynn is sworn in as the first woman chair of the Kershaw County Council in January of 2023. In the first months of Gwynn's leadership, we all witnessed to the Woodward Park bamboozle and the $3 million match and the $6 million for a Woodward Park travel baseball field. In spite of what Katie Gwynn had told everybody when she was running for office and went against the will of the people in this case, Gwynn seemed to have everything under control. It was Camelot all again. But just around August, there are rumors of affairs, and an affair becomes known. Subsequently, Katie goes on vacations and moves in with the Joneses, Jimmy Joneses, for a period of around 3 weeks. It's still unclear when the affair started. Gwynn stayed with the Joneses for 3 weeks after the affair became known to Tripp. After Gwynn's separation, she moves to go to Fort Rucker for aviation training. More on that in a minute. But on her way, she runs and meets her sister somewhere between Columbus, Ohio and Camden to drop off her 4-year-old son, Eli, so he can stay with her sister during the duration, and leaving Tripp Gwynn, the father, alone without his kid for 10-12 days. Shortly afterwards, Katie is tagged in a Facebook post in Destin, Florida. And as you can see here from the quote, she says that she's a single mom and an Apache pilot, one of 40 in the nation. First, we know she's not a single mom, that she's just now separated. Then, we know that she's not a qualified Apache pilot and hasn't flown since June 17 and probably will never fly again. And then, there are more than 40 women Apache pilots, Chinook pilots, all kinds of helicopter pilots in Army aviation in the nation. And she knows that that was a lie too. There's lie after lie after lie. Chairwoman Gwynn penned a letter to council explaining her absence at the September 26 meeting. The letter, which is read by Councilman Jimmy Jones, and when you hear this, pay particular attention to when she discusses The reason she's there at Fort Rucker is aviation training.
You're welcome, sir.
If I could, before we get started, I want to read a letter or an email that Madam Chair Gwynn sent to me. She wanted me to share this with the group. First off, I want to say that I salute her service to our country. That's where she's at tonight. She's full-time call of duty. And I'm going to read this verbatim, word for word, as she wrote it. Good evening, Kershaw County. I am currently on temporary duty travel, TDY, attending military aviation training in Fort Rucker, Alabama. I hate that I am missing tonight's meeting, and I am appreciative of Vice Chairman Jones's hard work and assistance with the chair duties in my absence. I will be back and ready for the first meeting in October, October 10th. To my colleagues, I would like to ask for your nomination and full support of Ms. Heather Ives-Dykes to the Planning and Zoning Commission tonight. I look forward to getting back to the people's business as soon as possible. Thank you and have a great meeting tonight. Very respectfully, Madam Chair Katie Gwynn.
Makes it sound like she was flying Apache helicopters or something, doesn't it? And no way, shape, or form did this involve any fly time. As our sources said, she wasn't down there flying to learn helicopters. She was learning how to fly a desk. Quote, yes, she is in an aviation battalion, but she ain't flying. One of the experienced and knowledgeable staff sergeants told us. We asked several of our sources if Katie would ever fly again, and every single one of them did not hesitate and said no. We also asked our sources that there was a 6-year contract that Katie and all soldiers that are going into the aviation wing, in order to go into flight training, they have to sign a 6-year commitment, a 6-year contract to fly and do the things they need to do to in order to live up to the contract and pay for the $1 million of training that they're going to receive. We asked our sources, well, is there any consequences? But it appears Katie has not lived up to those commitments. All of them said there are no consequences. She's never been reprimanded for any of this. And in this woke military, it just goes by and nobody says anything, and they get shipped off to other jobs and moved around, and they're counted on the rolls, but still are not there to fly. Quote, she was shipped off and appeased. Nothing ever happened any of the times. So what's really going on? Now, Katie stated that she'd be back for the first meeting in October, October 10th. Let's listen in on the beginning of the October 10th meeting.
Call this meeting to order. It's 6 o'clock. Before we get started, I'd like to mention that Katie Gwynn, Chairwoman Katie Gwynn, will not be here due to a personal issue.
What's going on here? What in the world? All of a sudden, she was supposed to be ready, but now, for personal reasons, she's not there. And what else is interesting, and I don't know if anybody noticed right there, Jimmy Jones, good time Jimmy, has moved his seat from the right of Katie Gwynn all the way to the end and substituted Danny Cato in where Jimmy has been to the right of Katie since the first meeting in January when the new council was seated. What's going on, Jimmy? Why are you doing that? Why are you moving away from Cinderella? Is there trouble in Camelot? Where's Katie? Waldo might be easier to find than Katie Gwynn. She's been neglecting her duties, hasn't been to a meeting since August. She's been absent for more meetings than anybody else on council, with Russell Brazel running a distant second. So why is Good Time Jimmy moving away from him? Now, did the janitor move his placard? And he said, well, you know, I guess this is where I got to go now. Or did Danny Cato want to move over there next to Katie Gwynn's now empty chair? What's really going on here? Ladies and gentlemen, this story serves as a case study from which we can all learn. How is it possible that no one in the Army, the doctors, the command staff, the immediate superiors, did nothing to help or discipline Miss Gwynn? Every military source used in this story speaks about the woke military and how it has left the armed forces in shambles. Gender bias is rampant to the point it permeates every level of the services. The system is ripe for mentally ill women to take advantage of the system and to manipulate it against anyone standing in their way. No commander is willing to risk their position or to speak out and call attention to a clear problem and stop it before it spreads like a cancer. We clearly acknowledge that the misfit toys are a small percentage of the whole force. The fact that they are allowed to continue service and never stop shows a clearly broken system. The majority of good soldiers will know that if they do speak out and call attention to a problem, they will be persecuted. They also have been shown the misfit will never be reprimanded or punished, much less thrown out. Not only are they not thrown out, they are given do-nothing jobs where they serve out their time doing little. In the end, it will be us, the taxpayers, on the hook for the retirement benefits and medical care for all the misfits for the rest of their lives. This is the woke military of today. This small group of influencers from the west of the Watery River had but one goal in mind. Remove Julian Burns was the only thing on their minds. We don't care about her. Anyone but Burns was always their cry. Blinded by their obsession and failing to find anyone the glass slipper fit during their search, they found their tool, their way to unseat the demon. Katie Gwynn was Cinderella, and the shoe fit. The chosen one was introduced to the politician over lunch, where this pretty woman had been recently hired as the liaison. A friendship blossomed as the June flowers bloomed and the summer passed into the fall. Quote, you should run for chair. You are very smart and we need people, good people like you. I can help. I can hear all the same lines ringing in my head. So what's going to happen? What is going to be the next bomb? Katie's history tells us that she has reached her zenith yet again, and the stars are about to fall. First the marriage, then the business, then the final fall before she moves on, resigning for the good of the people, leaving destroyed lives in the trail behind. Did she have an affair? We don't know. But the lessons we have learned might perhaps give us some pause. The people were ignorant and blinded by the propaganda. The people of Kershaw County were unaware in the spring of 2021 that a small influential group was planning to oust Julian Burns. The 6.5 years prior had been what they viewed as a disaster under Burns' leadership and were determined to do whatever it takes to get him out. The people were busy working and trying to raise their children, unaware of the propaganda machine gathering around a pretty young lady with a very troubled past. In political circles, the word of this new candidate spread like wildfire through the dry tinder of a forest. The anyone but Burns cabal had their girl and began planning and laying down the pathway to taking control of the Kershaw County Council through the control of the chair. Longtime Councilman Jimmy Jones was the point man for the secretive cabal of influencers and financiers and was key to recruiting and ultimately mentoring Gwen in the game of politics. Katie Gwen, a newcomer who had no political background and only months earlier began working inside the Kershaw County Republican Party. Katie Gwen had helped during the precinct reorganization, which takes place every 2 years, and determine who controls the party. For reasons that still remain unknown, Gwen rapidly rose into stature, and with her election to the county executive committee position, she would represent the GOP at the state level. During this same period, Representative Vic Dabney lobbied the state delegation to hire Gwen as assistant liaison to the Kershaw County Council. Dabney later regretted his decision and warned Mr. Jones about Katie Gwen and the troubling past she had. Jones rejected Dabney's warning and defended her, although he had only met her about a month prior. Who do we choose to be our leaders? Is the person even capable of running their own lives? How do you know if you don't know? What if we elect the least among us? What if we are electing narcissists, sociopaths, and psychopaths? What sort of ramifications could that have on a society and the political parties? A kakistocracy, ruled by the most unscrupulous, dishonest, selfish, power-hungry manipulators, thieves, and murderers. A kakistocracy is only able to form when the people are deaf, dumb, and blind to who they elect. Only a vigilant people, hell-bent on protecting their liberty, can withstand the rise of a kakistocracy. It's late in the game. Clearly, in the case of Katie Gwen, no one was vigilant enough.
If a government claims a right, and then their claim is that they derive these rights from the people,
right?
Well, how can people give a group rights that they don't themselves have?
To steal from each other.
Right, if we can't tax people, like I can't tax you, where exactly does government derive this right from? And once you come to, you realize that the goal ought to be as voluntary a society as possible. Now, how exactly you achieve that, how far you can push that is debatable, but certainly that should be the goal. That if government is providing a service for you, well then why does it need to be provided by force?